Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
May 12th, 2009, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, build your own workflow. Workflow, well, you know, it has that nasty work in the word, but really it's a lot more fun than that. And workflow itself can be actually bring a lot of joy to photography, and that's what I want to talk about today. Now, the reason why I'm doing this particular podcast is because I do a workshop at the JC, at the junior college in my area, which is in Santa Rosa, California. It's in the northern part of California. And I do it once every quarter. And I always talk about it on Twitter. And I usually do a post on the Digital Story to let people know that I'm doing this workshop. It runs from 10 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. And like I said, I do about 4 times a year. And I always get notes from people, well, wouldn't it be great if you could, you know, do a webcast or you know, tell us about the workshop, because we can't travel all the way to Santa Rosa to see you as much as we would like to. So I thought, okay, great, good idea. What I'll do is actually kind of put the essence of the workshop here in this podcast so that you can get a feel, and there's a lot of great tips that I'm going to cover today. And then I'll also post the notes, you know, the handouts that I do for the workshop on the Digital Story. They'll be in the show notes for this show. And so then you can get them. It's a PDF file. It's not that big. And basically, it just clicks through a lot of the highlights that I talk about during the course of the day when I'm teaching it. And you can really get a lot of the stuff. Now, you have to promise me, if you ever come out to Santa Rosa while I'm teaching this thing, you got to come to class, all right? So there's the deal right there. Come to class if you're around. Otherwise, enjoy today's little chat about building your own workflow. So first of all, let me define, you know, my version of what workflow is. And I'm going to just tell you what the slide says that I put up on the screen. That it's about process. It's not the platform or the specific tools. What I'm going to show you are the key elements that you should be putting into place for your digital photography workflow. You can then choose your favorite platform and insert applications and tools to build the perfect workflow for you. And that's really, you know, the essence of it. So the way that I designed this thing is that we have a worksheet, and this worksheet is actually in the PDF that you can download. And it has, you know, blanks for all the different steps in the workflow that I cover during the course of the day. And then I have people fill out, you know, how to achieve each of these tasks in the workflow using the tools that they have right now. And then in the margin, I have them write the, you know, maybe what they'd like to go to in the future. So for instance, right now, if they're piecing together workflow using the Finder, you know, organizing folders, and maybe have Photoshop elements, but after taking the class, they see that maybe Adobe Photoshop Lightroom is really a more elegant solution for them because they're on Windows and they want an application that, you know, consolidates everything, all the steps. Then in the margin, they could put Lightroom for a lot of the steps where now they might have, you know, the Finder and elements and so forth. So that's the way this thing's designed, so that you can build something based on what you have right now. But you can also be thinking about what you might want to do in the future. So there are 5 key steps to this. The first one is acquire. And that's, you know, capturing the actual data itself with a digital camera or using a scanner. And there's actually something that you have to do even then to make sure that you have a nice clean workflow. And then the second step is organize. And the third step is edit. And there's 2 types of editing. There's photo editing, which is actually sorting and rating your images. And then there's image editing, which is adjusting tone and color. Okay, and then there's share, and a lot of times that is really output. So that could be print, web, slideshows, that kind of stuff. And then finally, save. And that's essentially, you know, archiving or backing up your photos. So the five key workflow steps are acquire, organize, edit, share, and save. There are a few tips when, you know, you're actually gathering your images to help make your workflow go easier later on when you are at the computer. And the first one is, you know, you want to set your timestamp on your camera so that it reflects the date and the time that you're actually taking the picture. And, you know, you have to adjust this after daylight savings and things like that. So make sure that your timestamp is accurate, because that gets written to every file, and that gives you options up the road, especially if you're working, you know, in the Finder, and you want to organize things by time and date, then correctly timestamped images makes that a lot easier. The other thing that I think is important is make sure that you set your file naming convention on your camera to continuous, so that it isn't resetting every time, you know, you put the memory card back in the camera, because you want unique file names as much as possible. So you want unique file names. You don't want it resetting, because those file name numbers are very handy for helping you identify photos. And so if you have a whole bunch of img_0001.jpegs, if you have those over and over again, it's set to reset, then, you know, that's going to create some confusion and I think put some stress on your workflow, especially if you're using a Finder-based system, especially if you're organizing files and folders on the desktop. Also, capture at your camera's highest resolution, get as much data as you can, and then if you need to share those images via email or on the web, learn how to sample those down so that you can make a copy, a lower resolution copy of the file, but always capture at the highest resolution, because you want to have as much data as possible, because you never know how you're going to want to use that image up the road. And then, of course, if you're shooting with a digital SLR, consider using RAW, because, you know, RAW allows you to capture even more data than if you're shooting JPEG. So those are just some tips that can help you when you're capturing your images have a better experience on the workflow side. What's next is then thinking about how you're actually going to organize your images. Now, I always start out with organizing them using the Finder. And this works if you're either on a Mac or on Windows. And that's essentially setting up files and folders. Because the one thing about this particular system is that software can come and go. And if you have a good Finder-based system, then you know you always will be organized. So what do I mean by that? Well, first of all, pick a folder in your pictures directory or in your My Photos directory, and have that be the folder where all of your images live. And it can be, you know, My Master Images or whatever you want to call it. So you want a dedicated folder where the actual pictures live. Then within that, every shoot that you upload should have its own folder. And then you have to come up with a naming convention for that folder. A lot of times I do month and year with some sort of descriptive label. So for example, for May 2009, a photo shoot that I did at the beach would be 05-09, the beach. You know, and I, a lot of times I would just name the beach, and then all the images would go in there. And then if I did another shoot in May, it'd be 05-09, the mountains, and on and on and on. I don't necessarily feel the need to rename the photos within the folders, although some people like to. And of course, there are lots of tools to do that. And that is the basic Finder-based system of organization. It's very simple. But the thing about it is, if you do that, then you have all of your options open. Let's say that, you know, up the road, you're thinking about maybe using Lightroom, or up the road, maybe you're thinking about using Aperture. And you have this great Finder-based system going right now. Well, you can just point Aperture or Lightroom to that Finder-based system that you have, whether it's on an external hard drive or on your computer, wherever you have it. And then you can just use those applications and not even have to move photos or do anything, because you already have them, you know, organized. Now, these applications, Lightroom and Aperture in particular can help you further organize your images. But the point being is that if they're organized on your computer, then regardless of which software you're using, it's going to be easier. And so a Finder-based system is always sort of the nuts and bolts of any well-organized workflow. That being said, I do like to use software to help me refine my workflow. And the four applications I talk about the most are Aperture by Apple, Lightroom by Adobe, iPhoto by Apple, and Photoshop Elements by Adobe. Now, the two Adobe products work on both Mac and Windows, and the two Apple products are for Macs only. So, for example, if someone's ready to move into something that's more robust, let's say they're using iPhoto right now or a Finder-based system, then if they're on a Mac, you know, Aperture becomes a likely candidate because it interops so well with all the other Mac applications. If they're on a Windows machine, they usually lean towards Lightroom because Lightroom runs wonderfully on Windows and it is an excellent option for Windows users. Although you can use Lightroom on a Mac too, and obviously many people do. But so, you know, you have those options, you know, as you're ready to do that. But those are the four applications that I talk about. And then you really get into the different steps of the workflow. So once you have your images on your computer in some sort of organized fashion, either using one of these applications or a Finder-based system, then I recommend very strongly that you rate them. And I think rating is one of those metadata activities that's actually worth the time spent. And whether you're using Bridge in a Photoshop workflow or Aperture or Lightroom or even iPhoto, in all of them, you can assign stars ratings to your images. You know, the image can be 1 star, 2 star, 3 stars, 4, or 5. And normally the way it works is that 5 stars would be the absolute best image, and then 1 star would be kind of a bow wow, and then no stars would be probably, you know, 1 step away from deleting it altogether. The reason why I think stars are important is because right away when you're first looking at the shoot, you can do the star ratings, and you have identified the best shots from that shoot, so that later on, 6 months, 9 months, a year later, if you need to go back to that shoot real quickly and grab a few photos to send off to somebody, you don't have to go back through all the images to decide which are the good ones and which ones aren't. You already know because they're star rated. Then on top of that, in all of these applications, you can create smart collections or smart albums that allow you to pull together albums automatically of all your 4-star images, 3-star images, and so on. And so then you always can just click on a folder or on a collection and see all the 3-star images that you've rated so far. And that can be handy also. So star rating is, I think, a very time-saving step, you know, in the workflow. And you can just do it when you're first looking at the photos. It's just a keystroke. You're going to look at them all anyway. Why not just rate them? Now, the thing that I do is that I do go through the images twice. First time, I just give them either 2 stars or no stars when I'm rating them. So they're either they pass muster and they get 2 stars, or I don't like them very much and they get no stars. Now, the no star images up the road may get deleted. They may not. You know, that it depends on the shoot. Once I've done that, then every image either has no stars or 2 stars. Then I sort by rating so that all the 2 stars come to the top, and I go through them one more time, and then some of those images I'll give a 3 or 4 star rating. The reason why I do it twice is because I don't have my wheels beneath me the first time I look at the shoot. I don't have any perspective because I haven't seen all the shots. So I might think the first shot that I see is a great shot, but after I look at the whole shoot, it may be a very mediocre shot. On the other hand, the first few shots I look at, I may be very depressed about, may not like them, only to find out as I go through the shoot that they may be some of the better images. So I kind of need to go through it once to get my bearings. Then the second time I go through it, then I can give a 2 or 3 or 4 star rating and, you know, feel more confident that I'm giving an accurate rating that's consistent with the other shoots that I've done. So I think star ratings are one of those metadata things that are important, because I do think they save you time and they give you the luxury of doing cool things like smart collections and so forth. So that's the photo editing phase, where you're actually organizing and identifying your best shots. Now, when you get into image editing, I think photo editing really helps you with your image editing. And again, this is where star ratings come in, because I feel pretty strongly that you should only image edit, and that's, you know, tone and color. You should only image edit your best shots. You shouldn't waste your time on an image that's a bow wow, or on an image that isn't the best in a series of shots that you took of the same subject. So you should only be, you know, image editing your best work. And so in my case, for instance, it's very rare that I'll open up an image that's less than 3 stars in image editor. Most of the time, it's 4-star images that I image edit. I might do a little tone and color adjustment or a little cropping on some of the 3-star shots. And then everything else just sits as it is, unless I need it up the road for some sort of special reason. So only image edit your best stuff. It'll save you a lot of time, and it keeps you working on your best work, which means that it has the highest odds of being, you know, looking really good after you're done image editing with it. And of course, you can use any of the tools for image editing, because they all have some sort of control. And that's, you know, Lightroom, Aperture have great controls. Obviously, the Photoshop Bridge ACR workflow has tremendous image editing controls. And even iPhoto isn't too bad, although when it comes to image editing, it's my least favorite of the bunch. I prefer either Photoshop, Lightroom, or Aperture for my tone and color adjustments. Again, only working on my best stuff. At this point, I usually do a little kind of a, it's not a digression because it's really important, but it's a little outside workflow, talk on calibration. And monitor calibration, I think, is really important. And so important, in fact, that if you're image editing on an uncalibrated monitor, you're pretty much wasting your time. And so what does that mean? Well, you know, calibration is, of course, setting your screen, the brightness, and the tone and the color to industry standard settings that other people are using, including output labs such as, you know, Shutterfly, including you know, the magazines that you may be submitting photos to, including Flickr, where other people are looking at your images on Flickr with calibrated monitors, on and on and on. So if your monitor is calibrated, then, of course, you can have some faith that what you're looking at on your computer, other people are seeing something similar, as long as their monitor is calibrated too. Now, if you're on a Mac, you know, the good news is that you don't have to buy a colorimeter, something such as the i1 or the Spider 3, which I recommend, but you don't absolutely have to. You could calibrate your monitor tonight. You just go into the System Preferences, click on Displays, click on Color, and you'll see a button there that says Calibrate. Go to Expert Mode, walk through the wizard, and it will create a color profile for you. You know, that really kind of helps pull your monitor into alignment. Now, I recommend for your white point setting, if you do that, 6500. And I recommend for your gamma setting, 2.2. Which might seem a little contrasty, but that is the industry standard for the most part, unless you're working in a workflow that uses 2.0 or 1.8. But for the most part, most of the world is using 2.2. So anyway, now, that being said, I still recommend that you get a colorimeter, like I said, Spider 3 or i1, where it objectively sets... creates a color profile for you. And it's an optical eye that goes on the screen. The screen is flashing different colors. It's reading them. It creates a profile that is objective. Because when you're doing it yourself using the calibrate option in OS X, you are deciding if something is the right tone or the right color based on, you know, kind of the visual prompts they're giving you. Colorimeter is very objective and it's more accurate. either way, if you want to have any hope at all of, you know, getting accurate prints or having other people see your images the way that you're looking at them on your computer, you just really need to calibrate your monitor. It's an essential part of the workflow. If you haven't done it, put it on your checklist. In fact, put it at the top of your checklist for one of the very next things that you're going to do. Another important part of the workshop that I teach talks about archiving and saving. And this is where the rule comes in. It's my rule. I mean, other people probably use it too, but I didn't read it anywhere. It's just something that I live by. And that's always have your photos in two places. So when you first take the shots, that's when you're most vulnerable, right? Because they're just on your memory card. So as soon as you upload them to your computer, then you have them in two places. You have them on your memory card and you have them on your computer. Now, I think the mistake a lot of people make, as soon as they do that, they erase the memory card. And I don't think you should, because then you're back to one place and then you're back to being vulnerable. So what I recommend is that you eject the memory card from the card reader. Don't erase the images. Leave them on there. And then back them up. Back up the ones that are on your computer, either to another hard drive, to a network, to a photo sharing site, you know, Shutterfly or Flickr, however you do it, back them up. Once you do that, then they're in two places again. They're on your computer and they're on the backup device, whatever that happens to be. Then if you want, then you can erase the memory card, you know, because you're following the two places rule. And two places rule means minimum two places. Then after that, I think you need a longer term strategy. And the gist of that is that you should have backup on location where you are. And then you should have at least your best images backed up in a separate location. Now, the way a lot of people handle the separate location is that they use optical media, such as a DVD. And this is, again, where the star rating helps you, because what you can do is, if you're star rating your images, then you can back up your four stars, possibly your threes, it depends on how you rate, onto optical media, and then take that off-site. Because, you know, if you're burning the disk, you're not going to want to burn all your shots, because disks just aren't big enough, even the new high capacity optical discs still aren't really big enough and they're not fast enough to do all of your photos unless you're a very, very, very light shooter. A lot of us shoot too much to burn everything onto optical disc. But if you're using the rating system, then what you can do is that you can take your highly rated images and put them on optical disc and send them off to the office or to your aunt's house or wherever that happens to be. And then still doing your regular backup of everything locally. That way, if something happens to your computer and your backup drives locally, you still at least have your best images saved off-site. So however you do it, it's up to you, but try to make sure that you back up both locally and then have something saved off-site so that you can withstand just about any catastrophe that would happen. So after we go through all that stuff, then we get to the worksheet, which I have printed out. It's on page 23 of the PDF handout. And it goes over capture, you know, what format you shoot, how you upload, what platform you're on, what tools you're going to use to add metadata, such as your author name and your copyright, what tools you're going to use to photo edit, and that's mainly sorting and star rating, what tools you're going to use for image editing, how you're going to print, if you're going to create web pages, what are you going to use for that? Same thing with slideshows. And then what system you're going to use for backup. And so we have all those slots that you have to fill out. And you fill them out based on the tools that you have right now. So you're building a workflow that you're going to go home and use that night. And then in the margins, because we've talked about all these other tools, and I've demonstrated Lightroom and Aperture and Bridge and so forth, then you can start thinking about where you want to move in the future. And that's the nuts and bolts of it. And it's a really nice exercise. It's really worth doing. So if you have the time, download the PDF. print out that page that I'm talking about, page 23. It's titled Workflow Worksheet. Fill it out and take a look at your workflow and just kind of, you know, play with it. Maybe print out a couple copies of that sheet and dabble with your workflow and see what you can build and see what you can create and look for opportunities to make it more efficient and also more robust. Like, for instance, if you're not adding a name and copyright right now, that's, I think, an important step of the workflow, and you need to find a way to do that. So I hope this gives you a little taste of what we cover in the workshop, and I hope it gives you practical things that you can do right now. It's a great workshop. It's called I've Taken Great Photos, Now What? And this is essentially what we talked about. Okay, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club business. So the photo assignment for this month is rim lighting, and rim lighting is great. And I'm going to probably do next week's podcast on it. I'll talk a little bit about it, but it's essentially having the light source, the main light source behind the subject, so you get that nice kind of halo effect on the hair and shoulders. So you have to the end of this month to turn in those photos and give it a try, because it's a great portrait technique especially. And I want to thank our sponsors, SiteGrinder, Photoshop plugin that allows you to design great web pages in Photoshop. And then SiteGrinder does all the HTML, all the CSS, all the coding for you, and it works fabulous. I have an interview with someone who uses SiteGrinder on the podcast list right now. It's really worth checking out. It's a terrific application. And Red River Paper, and I've been testing some new papers lately. I've been testing the art papers and really enjoying, you know, these just beautiful cotton fibery papers and printing out on them. And I should have some good stuff to report here soon on that. But Red River Paper, they allow you to have really fabulous paper at a more affordable price. And that means then that we can print more, and that's a good thing. And Boinc Software, the makers of Photomagico and Boinc TV, and these are two of the more clever pieces of software I've seen for the Mac, for photographers and people who like working with video. And if you haven't checked them out, please do. All three of them have tiles on the Digital Story. Click on them, see what they're up to. All three sponsors are just really terrific and help us put the show on the air. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this week. I hope I've given you some good workflow tips. And so give them a little whack. But don't forget to take pictures, too. And then, most importantly, meet me back here next week for the next edition of the Digital Story Podcast. Until then, take care. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.